honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking the annual Day of Remembrance, a day when, regardless of what we look like or what our last name may be, we can join Americans of Japanese ancestry in remembering what happened 79 years ago when Executive Order 9066 led to 120,000 people being uprooted from their homes and held behind barbed wire. 33,000 Japanese Americans would serve in our armed forces in World War II once the government stopped considering them enemy aliens. Some of them served in the military intelligence service throughout the Pacific, others in the 100th Infantry Battalion and 442nd Regimental Combat Team, becoming the most decorated unit in American military history. In researching his book, Tears of Honor, author James Ardaiz spoke with Al Tortolano, one of the 211 men rescued in what has become the most well-known achievement of that Go for Broke unit. You can link to Al's original Hometown Heroes interview online, but here's what he told us about that moment of liberation.
When we found out that they finally broke through, oh man, it was like the sun coming out after a storm, you know. You figure it was 7 days of what we went through. It was really hell up there. When all of a sudden we heard one guy say, oh my God, we're fighting the Japs. Because we didn't even know at the time that there was a 442nd. Mm-hmm. And yet they were attached to our division at times. Mm-hmm. But we didn't even know. And that's why that's one guy that made that remark when we saw Japanese soldiers who were fighting the Japs. But then we found out they're our rescuers. And all we wanted to do was get out of there. I know when they first rescued us, I was so happy and thankful. And then when we found out years, we didn't know until way later how many they actually lost. And I thought about it. I felt so bad because I said, here's a group of people that were used during the war. I don't know how to put it, but it seemed like when any dirty job had to be done or any fighting that they feel was almost impossible, the 442nd was always involved. Then I find out what their parents went through, and for them to volunteer to fight for their country like they did, I didn't know how to think about it. I just grabbed them and want to hug them.
Years later, Al Tortolano would get to hug one of his liberators. While driving a patient shuttle at a VA facility in Palo Alto, California, he met Lawson Sakai, who had been wounded and nearly killed in that effort to free the Lost Battalion. You can find Lawson's complete interview online, too, but for today's program, these words from Lawson Sakai seem to really dovetail with James Ardaiz's book, Tears of Honor.
I think we did what we intended to do. I'm sorry that, like my parents and all the other Issei who are now all gone, didn't really live long enough to capitalize on what we had gotten for them. 1952, I believe, they were allowed to become naturalized citizens of the United States. You know, a huge turnaround from deportation to naturalization, you know, and all because of what their children, the Nisei boys, did for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very important to impress on, like, my children and their children, that they know that first generation that was born here suffered along with their parents because they couldn't get jobs either. But by doing what they did, going to war and so forth, they created the life for them that's so good.
That was the voice of Lawson Sakai, helping us understand why it is so important to remember. If you're a regular listener to this program, you've heard Lawson Sakai, you've heard Al Tortolano, but until today, you might not have heard that name, Young Oak Kim. If you read James Ardaiz's new book, Tears of Honor, as you follow two aspiring Japanese-American ballplayers named Sammy and Freddie and their journey through the internment, the war, and beyond, you're also going to learn, and I know I'm thankful to have learned more, about this Korean-American hero who served along with those Go for Broke men of the 100th and 442nd.
In World War II, as in any war, you have a lot of people who do heroic things that really aren't recognized or achieve a certain commonality in the sense of that's just what people do. And the answer is it's not what people do, number one. But you have some individuals who just simply stand out among other men and women. That's him. You know, I think the American people should see this. They'll also see the actions of the Japanese Americans and what they did, particularly in the rescue of the Lost Texas Battalion, which is told here. I mean, one thing I want to emphasize is you and I are talking about war, but this isn't a book about war. This is a book about people, and war is a backdrop because it brings out the best and the worst, I think, in people. But it's a book about people who are reacting to war that they're placed in, whether it's mom and dad, whether it's your son, whether it's your fiance, whatever it may be. So there's a lot of, this is a human interest story against the backdrop of war. So I don't like it when people say, well, you wrote a book about war. My answer is no, I wrote a book about people. I go to the fairgrounds now and I look around the fairgrounds and I see what people lived in, and they're still there. And I think, when I was a kid, I used to walk through here and all I saw was horses. I didn't see that people actually lived in these stables. So, you know, I wanted to say, well, okay, so when they put them in these places, life goes on. How do you deal with that? You know, somebody dies, what do you do? Somebody has a baby, what do you do? And then I wanted to use baseball as the kind of the metaphor, because it's such a traditionally American game. Baseball is something that you see as a recurrent theme in this book. You know, whether it's before the war as people are playing baseball and who their heroes are, in the internment camps whenever they form baseball teams. And I used the names of people here in the valley that were big baseball players of Japanese American descent. So those names are in there. To a certain extent, they're placed in fictionalized situations, but they're in there as baseball figures, and it's kind of an homage to what they did. People don't know about those people, but they'll recognize some of the names and they'll realize, oh, you know, I thought he was a chiropractor.
That kind of thing. That jumped out at me when I saw Zenimura and Nakagawa pop up in there, and some others. As an aside, with Young Oak Kim, you could say on one hand, what difference does it make? And I think of Joe Sakato, or some people knew him as George, who was a Japanese-American Medal of Honor winner, who in the war was given the Distinguished Service Cross, wounded in freeing the Lost Battalion, never got to see the completion of that. But, you know, years later, when Clinton's president, he's part of a large group of minority medal honorees whose medals were upgraded to the Medal of Honor. He didn't even know it was going on, so he certainly wasn't seeking it. But for you, in seeing some of the recognition and the decoration of Japanese Americans of the actions you just described with Young Oak Kim at Anzio, is that something you think, in your opinion, should have been upgraded to the Medal of Honor?
Well, I do, and I, you know, I don't want to compare it to other men who won the Medal of Honor. That's such a singular medal in terms of what it means. But I would say that certainly when you look at what he did, I would say that he is as deserving as what other men did. I mean, frequently when people win the Medal of Honor, they win it posthumously.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kim, when you look at what he did at that time, they weren't giving out Medals of Honor to Asians. I mean, you have to consider that this man went on a mission that every single commander regarded as a suicide mission. And he volunteered to do it knowing that. And the theater commander approved it because they desperately needed the information and believed that it was a suicide mission, did not think that Kim would survive. And then when you look at what he did, it's like, okay, you know, what defines a hero? The interesting thing I found with Kim is I doubt if he gave a moment's thought to that.
Exactly.
I really don't.
Which underscores the heroism in my mind. And I wonder if maybe that's the reason that it would be a good thing if he were given the Medal of Honor now. Yeah, he's gone. What difference does it make? Well, maybe the difference it makes is more people know his story if his medal were upgraded to the Medal of Honor.
Well, I agree, and I think also everybody needs their heroes. The Korean community, for example, there's a large Korean community in Los Angeles, but I think recognizing when you... It's something that we have in our society. One of the things that we look at and we say, well, gee, you know, I need to see my face up there on the court. I need to see my face in government. Well, we know, for example, that in World War II and certainly in World War I, we didn't have integrated units. And so we had separate African-American units. And yet those units, particularly later in the war when they were allowed to actually participate in combat, did amazing things. That needs to be recognized. It's kind of like our Buffalo soldiers that we had. You know, that needs to be recognized because that helps elevate community and our culture. So, yeah, I don't think Jong-ok Kim deserves a Medal of Honor because he's Korean. I think Jong-ok Kim deserves a Medal of Honor because he deserves a Medal of Honor. But I think it would mean a lot to the community, and I think it's something that, you know, it's overdue. There are a lot of men and women that have done things that probably are maybe, if not equivalent, certainly of singular acts of courage, which will never be recognized. We'll never know about them. So I think when we have a real hero and we know, then we should recognize that and celebrate it, and kids should know.
Well, maybe this book, Tears of Honor, will help accomplish that. If there's anything else you want to share about the book and what you've learned putting it together, feel free. I think the last question I have is from a big picture perspective. When someone's done flipping through all these pages, and I'm sure you felt like you could have written five of these books with all the knowledge that you gleaned in these years, but is there one reality that you want people to take away from this book, a message or an understanding that maybe even you discovered along the way?
I have a lot of questions that I'm asked sometimes and was asked by publishers and agents about the title. And a lot of people didn't like the title. Some people, you know, love the title. I like the title. So that was it. Why is that the title? Well, you'll know that the answer to that when you get to the end of the book. And I want people to read this and know that as much as we may look different, one step below that visual appearance, there's really very little difference among us. We want the same things. We hope for the same things. We cry over the same things. Once we recognize that, we will realize that, you know, the things that make us a little different are to be celebrated, our heritage. But the thing that makes us the same, that's the thing that makes us Americans. And I would like people to finish this book, put it down, think about what's in it, and realize we're far more alike than we are different, and we need to all stick together because the things that make us the same are what's really important. That's what I want people to realize, and I hope that people get out of this book.
You write in your introduction that both of your parents served in World War II. And, you know, as I spend all this time talking to World War II vets and I'll interact with kids and people today, they may think they're not connected to World War II, but I always find in some way we all are. And clearly, if both of your parents served, you are. Can you share anything about what your parents did or how that impacted you?
My father was in the Aleutians in World War II. He was an infantry officer in the Aleutians, and he was actually on a, I'll call it a tugboat. It wasn't exactly a tugboat, but they... Army used that up there. So he was up there when the Japanese tried to attack the Aleutians and basically foundered. My mother was a frontline field nurse in the South Pacific in World War II. And I always laughed because I think my father resented the fact that my mother saw more combat than my dad did. But she was literally on the front line. She was in a frontline unit as boys came off the line. My mother... Her closest friend, she had a couple of women that she palled around with her, in, you know, later in life, one of whom was Japanese-American and who had been interned. And, of course, in the South Pacific, the combat was against Japanese. My mother had no prejudices that I could ever glean against anybody. But when she was 70, we took her to Pearl Harbor, and I watched her and her anger over all of the Japanese tourists going out there and how upset she got. I mean, I had to actually go over and kind of restrain her and pull her away because I heard this old woman telling people they shouldn't be allowed to be there. She told me later when she was standing there at the Arizona Memorial, she said, and she was crying, and I seldom saw my mother crying, and she said, "You just don't understand." And she's right. I didn't. But, you know, for my parents, it was a defining event in their lives. I mean, everything seemed to stem from that. You know, we talk about that generation, but I think that the war was a defining moment. And I don't think we have ever, and my generation has ever had a defining moment like that, where we all came together. I mean, Vietnam was about as divisive as it could be, and Korea was about as ambiguous as it could be. And nobody knows what the hell Iraq and Afghanistan are. So for them, yeah, I dedicated this book in part to them because this is really a book about their generation. So I hope this book tells people about what our obligations are when times get tough, but also helps them celebrate the fact that they're Americans. It certainly made me feel that way. I would encourage people to look at this as a story about people and not about war. At the end of the book, I hope that what they care about are less the story and more the people. And they think about that for a long time.
Again, the book is Tears of Honor by James Ardise. I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com as well as that Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. But we're out of time today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.